Hello, everybody. I'm your host today, Daniel Wallach. 5 years ago, when Dan Worley and I started Conduct Detrimental, we focused the title of our podcast on the misconduct of certain professional athletes. The Deflategate case gave us the title of our show. But Conduct Detrimental could apply equally to misbehavior. And in Brady's case, it wasn't actually misbehavior, unless you want to look at the National Football League side of it. But the concept could apply to professional players, collegiate players, team owners, team executives, coaches, up and down the line. And I think we're seeing that play out in the world of sports over the last couple of weeks, last couple of months. Today, we're going to look at another side of the coin of conduct detrimental, which is the possible runaway abuses of the name, image, and likeness laws that were enacted in states like Florida, California, Michigan, and a whole host of other states. This week on Conduct Detrimental, we tackle the name, image, and likeness situation in the aftermath of the Alston case. And joining me today in Dan Lust's absence, you know, Dan is away on a special assignment. It took three lawyers to replace Dan. Joining me today, Mike Lawson, our social media coordinator and sometimes co-host of Conduct Detrimental from Syracuse Law School, Taryn Sharma from Minnesota Law School, and Jason Morin from Hofstra Law School, the president of the Hofstra Sports and Entertainment Law Society. All three gentlemen are contributors to Conduct Detrimental, and it's appropriate that we have young lawyers and law students from three major schools that have vibrant athletic programs. So we're going to talk about a topic near and dear to their heart because they're so close to the action at their colleges and law schools, the compensation of athletes for use of their name, image, and likeness today on Conduct Detrimental. Welcome, guys.
Dan, how's it going? Taryn, Jason. Just before we jump right into all the wheeling and dealing that is name, image, and likeness, I want to talk about some of the deals that Themis has. We talk about all the time. We are sponsored by Themis. As you law students now listening to this podcast are you know, now you're into your first month of law school. If you're a 1L, congrats, you've made it through your first month of law school. Right about now is when you see those bar prep tables popping up. And one of those is going to be Themis. So please go talk to the Themis rep at your school. Talk about the cost. Talk about, you know, they have unlimited graded essays. They have dedicated essay graders. Every director at each school is probably going to be there at the table. So definitely reach out. And we definitely love Themis. So I guess the first thing we want to talk about here, Dan, is the deal down in Florida with FAU, Florida Atlantic University. We've got a couple of different name, image, and likeness deals happening here. The one that kind of stuck out, I think you were the one who kind of pointed out, was the quarterback for FAU, Nikosi Perry. It's a first name, image, and likeness deal with an alcohol company, Isle Mirada Beer Company.
I'm familiar with Isle Mirada, which is near the Florida Keys, but I have never tasted Isle Mirada beer. I've never heard of Isle Mirada beer, I guess, which is exactly the point. As a result of this name, image, and likeness deal with an alcohol company, hundreds of thousands of millions of college football fans now know Isle Mirada Beer Company. What did you think of the deal?
This deal is the first of its kind in that we haven't seen any NIL-related alcohol deals throughout the country thus far. And, you know, people immediately jump out and say, how is this permitted? You know, a lot of schools, almost the majority of schools, seem to preclude their student athletes from partnering with any alcoholic brands. The reason why that Nikosi Perry at Florida Atlantic University is able to partner with this nostalgic beer for Dan is because the FAU policy says that their students may be prohibited from involvement in any activities that conflict with the school's institutional values, which includes alcohol. However, the caveat there is that the rule only applies to those who are under the age of 21. Now, Nikosi Perry is a graduate transfer from Miami. He is 23 years old. So clearly, statutorily, in terms of FAU's policy, Perry is good to go with flying colors here to be the first of its kind, an alcoholic NIL deal.
Well, we just came off of a controversy several weeks ago with Barstool, and universities and colleges across the country were disassociating themselves, or at least outwardly rejecting any affiliation between athletes and Barstool Sports. And I'm not talking the sports book, but just the Barstool brand in general, because of the, you know, conjuring up of the image of gambling. Now, Nikosi Perry may be over the age of consent, but his peer group at FAU is freshmen through seniors, ages 18 to 21, the ones who are likely going to be influenced by any endorsement deals that Perry signs with Alamorada. So he's promoting a brand of alcohol to a peer group that is not legally allowed to consume alcohol in the state of Florida. Is this something that you could see the school having an issue with, rejecting it? Where does the NCAA fit in here? Personally, I don't see a problem because, he is over the age of consent and alcohol is marketed on TV, radio, newspapers. It is all over the place in terms of brand awareness. So it would seem hypocritical to me to draw a red line and prevent a college athlete over the age of 21 from endorsing a product that is so ubiquitous throughout the United States anyway through other mediums.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that this deal happened. It's a case where alcohol is being sold in a lot of the stadiums where these kids are playing. So it's not like it's not being advertised or sold in very close proximity to these players, whether they're under 21 or over. I am a little bit annoyed, not about the deal, but the lack of congruency as it goes throughout NCAA. And this is what happens when the NCAA abdicates its responsibility. They've basically left it up to the states. They've left it up to the conferences. They've left it up to the schools. Basically, everybody except for them, they have punted responsibility away. And so that's why we don't have any consistent rules. When I first saw the news story break, I was like, how is that possible? And then I had to look into it. And obviously I was able to learn what Jason just said and why it's allowed. But it is just a case of where the NCAA just so selectively exercises its power. It's a little annoying as a college sports fan.
I think the perfect thing you just said, Dan, before is it feels hypocritical. And only to the extent that if you go to a college sporting event, freshmen in college are 18 years old, sometimes maybe 17 years old, right? The drinking age is 21. Yet you go to a stadium, obviously they can't purchase it, but all throughout that stadium, it's Bud Light, Budweiser, Coors Light, whatever you want to drink. So it only makes sense that it would feel hypocritical that FAU would now say, oh no, you can't also have a sponsorship deal with a beer company. Only we can have that. Now, Dan, we just talked about the issues regarding student athletes and drinking and that kind of culture here. And you just mentioned Barstool Sports. What is kind of the connection here between some of the issues we've seen with these name, image, and likeness deals now with gambling and now alcohol?
Well, there haven't really been name, image, and likeness deals on the collegiate level for gambling because the schools don't allow them. The state laws generally don't allow them. And the NCAA, as the last line of defense, probably won't allow them. But no one has ever killed a pedestrian driving while gambling. So when you introduce and inject alcohol into the consciousness and into the advertising, you're promoting a product that has at least, if you look at the statistics and the deaths and all the, drunk driving, incidents where people get hurt and even worse killed, alcohol abuse is certainly a serious problem on all levels of society, but certainly focused within a certain age group, 18 to 21, that are below the age where you can legally drink. I think if you're going to allow alcohol-based NIL deals with alcohol companies, I don't see why you can't also allow affiliations with gambling companies under certain strict guidelines. Personally, I'm not ready to say alcohol advertisements sponsored by college athletes are acceptable. Where do you draw the line and where this becomes a slippery slope? Because marijuana is also becoming increasingly legalized across the country. Can cannabis companies enter into NIL deals with athletes?
I would add that to your point, Dan, comparing alcohol with sports betting and the permitted advertisements to certain groups. What could be another reason for the schools considering FAU and others to have no problem with permitting these alcoholic deals, these NIL deals with their student athletes who are over 21, may speak to the norms and public opinion regarding the two industries. I mean, sports gambling and its legality has not been prevalent for as long as alcohol in this country. So I think some schools maybe fear the repercussions societally from having their student athletes enter into deals with sports gambling companies. We've seen the rise of the FanDuels and the DraftKings, and it's certainly making its way into the American living room. But alcoholic beverages and advertising in that industry has been around for quite a while.
And you add to that this overarching fear of possible point shaving. And I think that that might also contribute to why they might not be eager to allow that. But again, there's no consistency. So maybe some schools will allow that. Maybe some conferences will allow that.
See, one of the problems with endorsement deals involving gambling is that state laws authorizing sports betting forbid advertisements directed at minors and anyone below the age of 21. So if a Barstool or Caesars, DraftKings or FanDuel enters into a deal with a collegiate athlete, well, definitionally, they're having an endorser whose peer group is below the legal age for gambling. And an argument could be made that that's advertising directed at a, you know, prohibited group under the state law authorizing sports betting. Alcohol could end up in the same category because of the age of consent for drinking and the likely demographic that the Isla Mirada beer advertising campaign will be directed to, which is likely college students who admire their FAU quarterback. Because let's face it, on the national level, no one's heard of Nikosi Perry. Those that are likely to be influenced by ads and other promotions on social media are going to be his peer group or FAU fans, which are mainly collegiate students. But I think for the value, I think for Isla Mirada Beer Company and some of the other endorsers or some of the other companies that have announced deals, they've already gotten the publicity from all this, you know, news coverage surrounding the deal. Whatever Isla Mirada Beer Company is paying Nikosi Perry, it doesn't matter what it is, they've made it back and then some through the brand awareness and the increased brand recognition from all the media coverage that has been generated this week.
Is Isla Mirada sold at their stadium?
I live 20 minutes south of, I think it's Howard Schnellenberger Stadium, you know, named after the legendary University of Miami coach who built the FAU program from scratch. I've never been to a game. Now, you know, in order to do investigative work for Conduct Detrimental to intelligently discuss this topic the next time around, I might have to go to a home game when I return from Siberia.
And take your first sip of Isla Mirada beer.
I probably will not like it. I'm a Coors Light, Bud Light, Isla Mirada beer. I'd have to, you know, really look into the ingredients, make sure it's kind of a smoother beer. But the point is, that company has generated in the national consciousness hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of free publicity in one day alone. So they're ahead of the game, which might be the point behind so many of these NIL deals, to get a one-day national advertising splash, which outweighs the cost that they're going to convey over to the athlete.
I think that's the point here. There is no, into what Taryn's point was before, there's no clear guidance here. So if what Jason cited to before, that it may not be okay. So what we have here is Isla Mirada signs this deal, even though maybe FAU does nix it and they don't want that to happen based on their policies or whatever. So, but like you said, they had that whatever day, week, month of publicity that there was a deal with an alcohol company. And we're discussing this right now, the morality of it. And this was the fear of allowing this. Staying in Florida here, we have FAU is in the news for a second time. Not just for their quarterback, but also with their tie with the Florida Panthers. The Florida Panthers had offered an NIL deal to all female student athletes, 200 female student athletes. And for them to sign up, it's a part of the FLA athlete, so Florida athlete, if you will. And the way for them to sign up is they have to go through the Dreamfield NIL platform, which ties into the University of Miami and their quarterback, Derek King, who founded this platform for NIL for student athletes. So I kick you to the floor here. We've come from a morality issue with going back and forth with having a beer company sponsor here, but now we have a professional sports team sponsoring name, image, and likeness for another school in Florida. So Jason, what do you got?
Yeah, I think this is a excellent move for the Florida Panthers, who, you know, routinely finish in the bottom three of attendance standings per year in the NHL. So, you know, they need to mix it up. They need to try unique things here, and what else besides an NIL deal with some student athletes. I thought there were some really, really interesting provisions of this deal. You know, we spoke about the fact that De'Ara King kind of constructed this deal behind the scenes through his Dreamfield company that he is a part owner of, and he's also working with the Florida Panthers, so some clear connection there. A really interesting point is that the two athletes who generate the most buzz on social media during the season will also receive a four-figure bonus payment. Some real incentive there. And I'm not sure what during the season means, as this is open to any women student athlete at FAU, but you know, some real incentive there to get some likes and get a potential four-figure bonus payment. So this is no small deal.
And it strikes me as a fair deal. And we're going to, you know, transition into a couple of other deals very shortly where the concept of fair market value is going to be a problematic issue for some of those deals. But the Panthers deal is in my view, a perfect example of, you know, professional sports partnering with college athletes to raise brand awareness for the professional sports team, because there are certainly synergies there. And moreover, the incentives to participate and the compensation are tied to success. They're tied to performance. And just generally speaking, outside of that bonus incentive, which is only four figures, that's a very modest amount. For the most part, the compensation is going to be some cash, merchandise, free tickets to go to the game. That's a win-win for both sides. And it doesn't strike me as the type of deal that shocks the conscience or is disproportionate in terms of the value conveyed to the athlete in exchange for the services given. You would expect a professional sports team that wants to raise attendance and increase visibility within a region would want to use the collegiate athletes within the region to promote the sports team, because they're both within the same industry. And athletes have fans that follow the collegiate games that could potentially be consumers of the Florida Panthers. There's a synergy between the two situations. And we're going to strike a contrast between that and some of the deals that we're going to focus on a little later in the episode, one of which involves a nationwide mortgage lender. And we're going to, at least in my mind, question the synergy between a mortgage company and an 18-year-old athlete. But the Panthers deal seems to hit on all the right cylinders as being, in my view, the type of NIL deal that I think the states, would want to see happen. And that is really a fair deal for all involved and doesn't involve the kinds of abuses that those who are afraid of NIL deals and paying college athletes would be concerned about. This isn't that kind of deal. This is right on the money.
Yeah, this one's not necessarily like the Florida Panthers are not a booster kind of in disguise, like some of the other deals that we might be seeing.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of boosters, I mean, Dan referenced it earlier. We have some morality issues, again, talking about the alcohol deals. And then we have the morality issues, and a really big issue that kind of came up when Name, Image, and Likeness really started was the booster issue and boosters paying student athletes. And that was kind of a big no-no. It's been a violation of NCAA bylaws. And here we have a deal with Michigan State. Now, we were just talking about FAU, which is not a huge school, but Michigan State is as big as they get. And we have a deal with United Wholesale Mortgage. And the company had a deal with the men's basketball team and the men's football team. And every player gets a $500 stipend. And if you do the totals of all the athletes, that roughly adds up to about $800,000. Now, I think what's interesting here is the president and CEO of United Wholesale Mortgage Company, Matt Ishbia, is a booster, is a donor to Michigan State. And it was also disclosed that he donated $32 million to Michigan State earlier this year. So, Dan, you're all over this.
He played basketball at Michigan State.
Yeah.
What's notable about this deal, and I've been talking about this for quite a while, this strikes me as a booster payment disguised as an NIL deal. First of all, some of the notable criteria here, you're talking about a donor that is affiliated with Michigan State Athletics. One of the requirements for many state NIL laws is that the payments be made by an unaffiliated third party. Now, Matt Ishbia owns United Wholesale Mortgage. Matt and United Wholesale Mortgage under the law are separate, you know, persons. There's the corporation, and then there's the president. He's the donor. The company might be paying the athletes. I don't think you can do a corporate veil piercing or use corporate liability to shield or separate the individual from the corporation for purposes of identifying the control person for these NIL payments. If the individual is the booster and the company that is controlled by the individual is making the payments to the athletes, for purposes of monetary judgments, maybe they're separate beings. But for NIL purposes and looking at the economic reality of the transaction and who's really directing the payments, they are one and the same person. And what's notable about this deal is it's only directed to male athletes playing for the basketball and football team. So you're having a donor, a booster affiliated with the university, directing payments only to male athletes, which could raise Title IX issues. And there's the uniformity of the payment. Every member, walk-ons, scholarship players, are being paid the same amount regardless of their popularity, regardless of whether they have even social media accounts. And it raises, at least in my mind, serious questions as to the fair market value of the deal. You're basically providing $6,000 of free money every year to every player on the team simply for breathing, without having a corresponding work or without fair market value being given in return, unless we're talking about the star quarterback.
On Twitter today, from Amanda Kristovich at Front Office Sports, she posted a study of data put together by Open Doors, which really gives us a great picture of where NIL deals are at this point in time. So they have the total compensation split between men's and women's sports, and it's also split between divisions. So interestingly, in Division I sports, NCAA Division I sports, the men are bringing in 80% of the total compensation, with women just below 20%. In Division II, conversely, the men bring in 33% of total compensation, and the women have 66% of compensation. In the Division I, you know, we've seen a lot of the deals, which include the Michigan State, Mass deal, the Miami deal. So, you know, in NCAA Division I men's, there's been a lot of these major deals that run through entire programs, as well as individual athletes who really bring in a ton of revenue. So some really interesting data there from Open Doors. And, you know, we'll see if the trends continue in that direction or if things change here moving forward.
Yeah, it's now data is coming out. So we will see how that those trends end up adapting and changing. To push back on the Title IX part of it, this is just the first of this deal. I could see it maybe developing. I think especially with the Florida Panthers deal, seeing that the, you know, them sponsoring the female, there would have to be a tie to the institution. And him being an alumni and a booster, does that give enough of a tie to the university to raise the Title IX issue? I mean, if he's coming in as an NIL sponsor completely separate, even though he does have ties as a booster, then that wouldn't raise the Title IX issue. Then there wouldn't be any issue there.
But even putting aside Title IX, he's not an unaffiliated third party. He is a major booster of the university, who's donated millions of dollars to the athletics program. He's somebody who wants to see Michigan State Athletics succeed. Notably, he's not offering the same deal to every member of the Detroit Red Wings or the Detroit Tigers or Eastern Michigan University or Western Michigan University. It is specific to the college that he attended, and he is providing the type of monetary compensation that bears no proportion to the athlete's popularity, influence, or work actually performed. This is a deal, and it bears many similarities to the America's Top Team NIL deal with the University of Miami. It raises questions as to whether this is an unaffiliated third party, raises questions as to fair market value, as well as the value of the work performed. There are three different issues that could really create problems, not only for the athlete's eligibility, but for the school's eligibility under NCAA guidelines. Who's going to be the watchdog here? I don't know yet. I think the NCAA is still trying to figure things out. But this is essentially a Nevin Shapiro situation codified under the auspices of name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, well said. This one stinks a little bit more than, say, the BYU walk-ons getting their tuition covered. This one is so clearly he's tied to the university and Sheba played there, and he qualifies as what the NCAA's definition of a booster is. And I wish that I didn't have to keep coming back to it, but it's this kind of ambiguity that would be great if the NCAA could step in and say something, or at least just have one uniform rule, because this is going to be allowed and other boosters are going to do this as long as there's not some sort of guidance.
I think we can all agree that booster involvement in NIL deals on its face is not precluded. So we've seen a lot of this happen across the country. And obviously the concern is that there's a lot of ways that these booster deals can violate the rules. You mentioned the fair market value. That's certainly a concern. Another one is the recruiting inducement, boosters cannot create an NIL deal with the member school if it's an inducement for recruiting. So, you know, giving every single Michigan State basketball and football player a $500 blind payment, is that a way of saying, hey, high schoolers, you might want to be a Spartan because we're going to take care of you? So there's a lot of concerns here, but on its face, we have to agree that booster involvement is not per se illegal.
No, but under the law, if you look at it as sort of an insider situation, a transaction between insiders might be subject to much greater scrutiny and should attract greater scrutiny because of the suspicious circumstances where if you're looking at a fraudulent conveyances, for example, in a litigation setting, you never know what the true intent is because no one's ever going to come out and admit that they acted with fraudulent intent. You look at sort of the badges of fraud, which are, you know, criteria and that exists, such as relationship between family members. It's been a while, a couple of years since I litigated a case like that. But here, you look at the fact that this is a booster. He's an insider. He's donated a lot of money over the years to university, to Michigan State Athletics. He's paying the same amount to every athlete, even to a walk-on with no social media accounts. And that person gets paid the same as the best player on the football team. Only the major sports are getting it, not the women's sports. And there's no requirement that the athletes have to work a certain number of hours or meet a specific benchmark except to promote, you know, his mortgage company. And by the way, that raises another issue. If you're a member of the public and you're looking at advertising, are you going to care about what an 18-year-old says about about a mortgage lending company? Sign up with like American Home Mortgage. These are individual student athletes who haven't graduated college, have probably uniformly without exception, never taken out a mortgage in their life. And you look at the sort of the thread or connection or lack thereof between the student and the services that the company, you know, renders to the general public. And I can understand Almirada Beer might want to target fans of the FAU program and maybe even, you know, 21, 22, 23 year olds. I can accept that. I can also accept that the Florida Panthers want to use FAU students to promote another sport. There is a direct tie-in, but there is a sort of a broken line or a disconnect between an 18-year-old, you know, student athlete who's never even taken a real estate or a finance course promoting a mortgage business.
Yeah, good points, though. I don't think Chris Paul and Aaron Rodgers are really insurance experts over there with State Farm. So, you know, sometimes just someone's face may be sufficient for a business. You know, you don't need to have an expert say, here's why a mortgage is right for you, but just plastering their face next to your brand could be favorable.
That's fair. But, you know, at least they show Chris Paul like trying to prevent household disasters around his home. It's believable. You can see how he would want to protect his home with State Farm insurance as opposed to like, I just don't know what the third string kicker on Michigan State is going to tell me about a home mortgage when he's about as far from owning a home as I am.
I think to refer to it as a $500 stipend minimizes the overall impact. It's $500 per month. And for student athletes who attend the university for all 4 years, that's basically $24,000 of free money simply for existing, having to do the bare minimum. It basically equates to $24,000 per hour. Sign me up for a deal like that. And I think that's a deal that raises a lot of, you know, question marks and should be on the radar of the Michigan State University Athletic Department. I don't know how they approve a deal like that. And I don't know if any legal advisors were involved here, but deals like that, and then the one involving University of Miami's athletes and America Top Team, which bears many of the same hallmarks of the Michigan State University deal, these could create problems, not only for the athlete's eligibility, but for the school's eligibility under the NCAA. And, you know, what happens next? Who's the gatekeeper here?
Taryn's been alluding to this whole time. The NCAA is the gatekeeper. However, they are a terrible gatekeeper. And we saw that with Alston. So
yes,
the problem is the NCAA is like begging federal legislation to come down to have some sort of say in this, to give some sort of uniformity. And I think that's why also when July 1st hit, there's a reason that Dan Lust was all over Twitter with the Wild Wild West like theme song, because we are going on our third month of the Wild Wild West of name, image, and likeness, because there's no uniformity here and there's no certainty on what is allowed, what isn't allowed.
let's not, throw the NCAA completely under the bus. There is another actor here which has some supervisory, responsibility, and that's the athletic departments of the universities. University of Miami, for example, and I just looked at this online, they have their own name, image, and likeness policy, which requires, as does the state statute, a fair market value for work actually performed, unaffiliated third party. I think the onus is on the university athletic department to evaluate these deals, independently and say to the athletes, you can't do this or not allow an athlete to enter into this kind of deal without jeopardizing their eligibility. There is some role for the ADs to play here without just throwing your hands up in the air and leaving it at the doorstep of the NCAA.
Well, I think you're right, but you also cut out two other entities that have a say in this as well. The conferences, which is one step above the athletic departments, and the individual state that those schools are in. Now, when this first came out, the NCAA dropped it down to their conferences, and the conferences dropped it down to their schools on determining what to do when this all came out. But a lot of the states, the seven states, maybe eight now at the end of July, once those states had name, image, and likeness laws passed, most of the schools were deferring to whatever legislation came out in those individual states.
Another issue that concerns me, Dan, to your point with, Miami came through with a great policy. It seems to be working thus far. However, I have a problem with the prospect of high school students simply venue shopping in terms of their recruitment, searching for the lighter laws around the country or the lighter school policies throughout the country, which will virtually create a race to the bottom here in terms of compliance offices being really pushed by athletic departments and coaches to lessen the strict nature of their laws and, permit the deals with alcohol companies. And then we're going to see permittance with sports gambling companies, which some people may think that's a good thing. However, I do have a problem with the prospect of high school recruits looking around the country at the varying school policies and thinking which one can they get away with the most and make the most money.
It's not based on merit, right? If you're if you look at the University of Miami deal with America Top Team, if you look at the Michigan State student athlete deals with United Wholesale Mortgage, they're across the board, the uniform deal. As a high school student, you know that if you choose to attend either of those institutions, you're guaranteed $6,000 a year. Whereas it's not based on the merit of the individual athlete. If these are designed the way that they're supposed to extend these types of opportunities to athletes on an individualized basis, then it doesn't necessarily provide an unfair recruiting advantage. Certainly, if you're a top athlete going to University of Alabama, you know that NIL opportunities might be greater than if you had attended UCF, but it's not guaranteed. However, the Michigan State and the Miami deals are guaranteed, and it does provide an unfair recruiting advantage. And I think it subverts the purpose and the intent behind these NIL deals and could run afoul of school policies, NCAA bylaws, and the Constitution, as well as the state statute. The problem is, who's going to enforce the state statute? There's no private attorney general here. It's left to the discretion of the universities, the conferences, and the NCAA.
You were talking about gatekeepers, and one of the gatekeepers that was mentioned was the state governments, and because they're the ones in a lot of cases that have enacted these laws, and it makes you wonder what the priority is here. So in reaction to this United Wholesale Mortgage deal with Michigan State, a state rep in Michigan said that this is a Title IX issue and that it's incredibly disappointing and downright shocking that they chose to exclude the female athletes by only agreeing with these male revenue athletes. Or another state rep said in 2021, this sort of blatant sexism is unacceptable. So their issue is not that everybody could get paid, that might be a recruiting advantage. It's that certain groups aren't getting, or that certain groups are being left out. And so I'm wondering, what are the incentives for them to police it also? In a lot of cases, the people who are state government officials in these states, they have ties to those universities as well.
Yeah, but the state legislature enacts the law. They don't enforce the law, right? So there's no enforcement mechanism for state lawmakers. Maybe there's an enforcement mechanism for the attorney general of a particular state, but these are low-level financial deals. The state attorney general has a lot bigger fish to fry than to police $5,000 per year NIL deals for athletes. That's way down on the pecking order. I think the obvious watchdogs here are going to be the universities themselves, the conferences, and the NCAA. The state laws don't really vest any enforcement powers within, you know, the state apparatus. I think that's left to, you know, colleges to police and maybe private plaintiffs.
We keep going back to this. There's just, we have no guidance and we don't see any sort of guidance. And we'll see what FAU does with their deal involving alcohol. We're already seeing schools, American International College with the Barstool issue, right? American International College said no name, image, and likeness deals with Barstool Sports because of their connotation with gambling. So next, may we see the same kind of stance that FAU does and the same stance that maybe Michigan State will take, as maybe they say, you know, this is a clear violation of Title IX.
Well, if these schools don't take the initiative to reject these deals and to tell the athletes and the affiliated third parties that this is in violation of the state law, in violation of the school's NIL policy, and in violation of NCAA rules, if the school is not going to do that, they're placing their program in a position of vulnerability. They're placing their athletes in a position of vulnerability vis-a-vis the NCAA. So when the dust settles, I wouldn't expect the Michigan State deal with United Wholesale Mortgage to exist going forward, because that's an abusive situation that really subverts the NIL law in Michigan, and the American Top Team deal with the University of Miami athletes does skirt the edges and goes beyond what the NIL statute in the state of Florida permits, because the fair market value issue, the affiliation between Dan Lambert of American Top Team and University of Miami Athletics, the schools have to take this directly head on. Otherwise, they might be paying a greater price down the road with the NCAA. This is not what the state laws had intended when passing NIL statutes.
There's definitely a lot that we have to wait and see. Definitely keep in touch with conductdetrimental.com. We definitely aggregate all the news stories as they come out, review all the stuff that we're talking about here, all the new name, image, and likeness stuff that comes out. And we have our content creators, our writers who will give you their analysis, you know, hot off the press. So it's kind of a wait and see on what we're going to do, what some of these schools are going to do and how they're going to enforce it and who's going to enforce it and who's going to be the true gatekeeper on some of these deals. So I think that really wraps up our episode here. This space is so uncertain with what's happening here, and it's a lot of moving parts, but people are starting to dip their toe in the water here, and we're seeing how everything kind of plays out. So let's move to Dan Lust's favorite segment of the show, what to watch for here. We've got some interesting other name, image, and likeness things that are happening here. So Jason, what is your what to watch for here?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. An exciting segment, and my what to watch for of the week is UCLA's Jalen Clark. So this is the first deal of its kind with a college athlete actually creating his own personal cryptocurrency, which is called J-Rock and is going to be sold on the crypto platform called Rally. You know, this is a very interesting deal, as this is clearly an area of the financial market that has really become such a boom that it's made its way to TV. I don't know if you guys noticed tonight, Tom Brady is calling 30 people in a commercial, you know, regarding some cryptic, that's a good word for this, cryptic cryptocurrency that he seems to be creating here or partnering with for this website. So, you know, the crypto space has made its way into the mainstream media, and for some, it's really been forced down their throats. And Jalen Clark is the newest member to enter this space and the first member to do so as a college athlete. You know, while this is certainly a groundbreaking deal and it's one that I applaud, you know, you do have to be careful here, because now we're dealing with, this is not only a concern as to a school's policy or a state law, that may be the least of Jalen Clark's concern. You know, you have to consider the securities regulations of this country, and that's federal law. The SEC has very strict compliance regulations for the sale of securities. So that's really been a hotly debated issue as to whether certain securities and cryptocurrencies actually will be constituted as securities pursuant to the SEC's findings. You know, Jalen Clark, this is a really cool deal. It's the first of its kind, and J-Rock seems to be increasing in price. But there are a lot of areas of concern and measures for caution here that need to be taken. So we'll have to monitor this closely. But, you know, first of its kind cryptocurrency, UCLA.
And we don't have to go too far into the Howey test, which is how the SEC will determine whether this is an investment contract or not, whether J-Rock is an investment contract or not. But the really interesting point, which they will have to decide, is is there an expectation of profit? If you're investing in this for an opportunity to possibly appear in his YouTube video, Jalen Clark is really big on YouTube, or maybe end up with a ticket, which might be another issue in its own sense. But are those an expectation of profit by investing in this? That's something interesting that the SEC may take a look at.
It's very interesting to see with the crypto space what Jalen Clark is going to do. So definitely super interesting there. Taryn, what is your what to watch for?
My what to watch for is Gable Stevenson returning to the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Shout out to our guy, Dan Lust, who we're missing this week, but we'll definitely cover some wrestling in his absence. Olympic gold medalist and reigning NCAA wrestling champion Gable Stevenson signed WWE's first NIL deal, and that's going to allow him to come back to college to the University of Minnesota and seek to defend his title. And this is a great deal for the WWE also, as they're allowed to get him in the door and start to train under their guidance so that he can be the next WWE superstar. This guy is probably going to be the next Rock, the next John Cena. And so it's a really exciting time for WWE and for Gable Stevenson.
Yeah, Gable Stevenson just won gold in Tokyo. It's very exciting, and see what he does now coming back to college. But very, very interesting. Dan, what's your what to watch for?
Well, my what to watch for are sports betting related lawsuits. In the state of Florida, online sports betting is set to launch on October 15th. There are two pending lawsuits seeking to block the implementation of online sports betting. A case is pending in the District of Columbia Federal Court. Another one is in the Northern District of Florida, the Tallahassee Federal Court. What to watch for there is, I'm expecting the plaintiffs in that case to file a motion for a preliminary injunction and or temporary restraining order and tee this up for a hearing at some point within the next 4 weeks, where a court will decide whether online sports betting can launch on October 15th or whether an injunction should be entered, which could delay the rollout or end the rollout of online sports betting in the state of Florida. So that is going to be a major litigation to pay attention to in one of the most important states in the country for legalized sports betting.
My what to watch for is less legal and more sports. I am just praying that the Yankees make it to the playoffs at this point, because they seem to lose every single game that matters now. Hopefully they don't get absolutely smacked by the Mets in the Subway Series here, but that's my what to watch for. So a lot of things, a lot of moving parts. We're definitely going to keep an eye out. And again, please check out conductdetrimental.com for all the latest, the intersection of sports and law here, and we'll keep you up to date. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. Dan is at Wallach Legal. We're missing Dan Lust, but he is at Sports Law Lust. For Taryn, he's at TK Sharma Law. Jason is at Jason_Morin. Myself, I am Mike_Son_Of_Law. And for Stephanie, she is at S_Weisenberger_. So that is the whole Conduct Detrimental team. And for all of us here at Conduct Detrimental, we will see you next time on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.